Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Enjoy.
Decent Christian Talk, episode number 68. Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Gabe Jones. This is a show that's by the fans, for the fans, and just like all of you, I'm a fan of Christian music. And today, man, what an honor. We've got the great Eddie DeGarmo on today's show. Of course, a lot of you know that Eddie DeGarmo was a part of the duo DeGarmo and Key from the late 80s and early 90s. They were one of the biggest bands in the history of Christian music, truly pioneers in that genre. Eddie DeGarmo went on to start Forefront Records, which was the home of so many great bands such as DC Talk, Audio Adrenaline, Bleach, Jeff Moore in the Distance, Big Tent Revival, Skillet, just a lot of really, really awesome bands, and a lot of them can thank Eddie DeGarmo for getting started in the music industry. I'm here to talk with him today about his brand new book. It's called Rebel for God. It's a great book about stories in his days of DeGarmo and Key, and also as an executive in the Christian music industry. It's a really great book, pretty revealing at times. You can go check that out anywhere you get books online, such as Amazon.com, and it's definitely worth checking out. Before we head into that, I just wanted to kind of talk about some of the things that have been going on in today's Christian music industry. There's been a lot of, you know, it's a summertime, and a lot of times people release music during the summer, and this summer's no different. We just mentioned DC Talk. Toby Mac just put out a single called Everything. That's one of our favorite songs right now. There's been so many other great artists that have put out singles within the last week or so. Andy Mineo, Derek Minor with Propaganda, KB, Lecrae just put out a single with Andy Mineo, Tadashi just put out a few singles, of course 21 Pilots just put out two singles after a long hiatus, which they were just pretty much ghosting everybody, and then they came out with two really, really great songs. You know, it seems like these days the thing to do is to release singles and EPs instead of full-length albums. I guess it's the kind of thing with attention spans. Eddie and I will be talking about this a little bit later, but it's just kind of the thing to do. And one of the few full-length releases that I have seen within the last few weeks was with Martin Smith, who had been doing some music with his band Army of Bones, but this is his first worship release in a while, and it is called, let me get this right, it's called Love Song for a City, which actually, you know, that track was actually an Army of Bones song, and he kind of uses that chorus to start this worship project off. It's kind of a chorus that he sings at the beginning of the album. But it's a really good live album. For those of you that were Delirious fans, it's definitely worth checking out. A lot of the songs, you know, are kind of the Bethel and Jesus Culture style that kind of go on and on and on for a while. But there are a lot of songs that you might, especially those that are worship leaders, might be worth checking out. And, you know, there's a couple other singles. We talked about a couple before. Aaron Cole, as well, released a couple singles. It's a lot to talk about. Need to Breathe, The Protest, released a record. These are all definitely worth checking out. Even MXPX released a single recently. So that's definitely worth checking out while you are getting ready to check out our interview with Eddie DeGarmo. Make sure you check out those songs as well. We would just like to thank Indie Vision Music, Noah Hardwick, for providing these great release dates. If you have never checked out that website, check out indievisionmusic.com. They always post a pretty good comprehensive list of every week's releases. And there's also a great discussion, as always, on Christian Music subreddit. That's reddit.com/Christian Music. That's just one of my favorite places to discuss Christian music. We had a great conversation on there the other day about 21 Pilots and how they fit into kind of the Christian music culture in a weird way. But hey, before we head into the interview with Eddie DeGarmo, we need to talk about our Patreon page, patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. For as low as $1 a month, you can join our team and help fund our podcast. Unfortunately, when you have a show like this, it does cost a little bit of money to run. You kind of have to pay for hosting, which is kind of like paying for rent to have audio online, pretty much. But with your help, we've been able to stay on the air, and we would like your continued support. If you've never done that before, go check out patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. Once again, for as low as $1 a month, you can help join our team. You know what? If a couple of you just did that, $1 a month, it would fully fund our podcast for the rest of the year. And we would just greatly appreciate if you would check that out. If you would rather just do a one-time donation, go to decentchristiantalk.com on your laptop or tablet. I don't know what they're called these days, iPads, tablets. Check that out. There's a donate button on the website where you can donate through your PayPal account. Once again, thank you so much for all your support over the years. We just really like making these shows for you, and we just love to continue to do that as well. Hey guys, this is one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done. It's with Eddie DeGarmo. He is truly a legend. He has been a pioneer as an artist, and he's been truly a godsend for a lot of people when it comes to being an executive and getting artists that footing in the industry and catapulting them to a place where they are now. And it was such a privilege to speak with him. He was actually traveling to, I don't know, somewhere out in the country when we were talking. So you might hear some background noise, him driving, but it's all good. It was a great interview. Check it out now. Without further ado, here is my interview with Eddie DeGarmo.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
So, I read your book. It's called Rebel for God. It's a fantastic book. Why did you decide to write this?
Well, you know, when I first started to write it, I was basically writing it for my family to chronicle what I think is a pretty fantastic journey, you know, through all the things that I've faced and you know, challenges that I've been able to overcome and miracles that I've seen and just the grace of God in my life, you know, when I didn't deserve it. And I just wanted to chronicle it so, you know, our family could, if they ever wanted to, could know this story. And it turned into something more that I hadn't really planned on, and I had some friends and different, you know, pastors and leaders that said, Eddie, you've had so much experience in different areas that I think it would be good if you were to make this story available to others, because I think there's some teachable mentoring moments in there, either through some of the things I failed at or some of the things I succeeded at. So that's really why I wrote the book. So
the title is Rebel for God, and that's kind of like a kind of double-edged sword, because you had to kind of rebel, per se, against like the mainstream music and also the conservative Christian kind of base that rebelled against you guys. How was that, going through that, and how much of a struggle was that for you guys?
I mean, in the early days, it was certainly a struggle. And, you know, when Dana Key and myself started writing songs that reflected our faith, we had no idea of the lightning rod attraction that it would be for either Christians or non-Christians. You know, we first started playing the same kinds of venues that we played in our mainstream band and would talk about Jesus, and we soon found out that, man, that would get some people upset. So then we had some universities and church folks ask us to do events at their places. So we did that and faced maybe even more vocal resistance, if you will. And, I mean, I've had stuff thrown at me, you know. Fortunately, they didn't hit too much of the time. But I felt pretty strongly about what we were doing. And music for us was our platform to draw people together so that we could share our faith with them. And so we persevered. But in the early years, and we're not the only ones to face this. I mean, there's some other folks that have faced this similar thing. The conservative church leaders were pretty vocally opposed to what they saw as something that was, you know, attracting the young people away from, you know, their institutions. And we never meant to do that. We were just, you know, a lot of people have asked me, they said, Eddie, why did you play rock music? We never even thought about it. It's just the music we grew up on, and so when we wrote songs, that's what it sounded like, you know?
Yeah, so, you know, the book does a good job of explaining about how early you were in the music industry. What was one of the hardest parts? I know you talked about, like, the people, how people call it selling out, which is, like, creating music that is successfully commercially. How much of that was a struggle?
Well, it's always a struggle to address the marketplace. And once you make a decision in a creative endeavor that you're going to address the marketplace, you start creating art at some level that people want to purchase. And you can do that whether you're a visual artist or, you know, a sculpture or a musical artist. You know, because you're wanting to make your livelihood off of your products, if you will. And for us, the pure rock and roll audience in the early days of Christian music was pretty small and pretty cohesive. And we knew that if we didn't reach the broader audience through radio at the time, that's a little different now than what it was then. Not totally different, but a little bit. We knew that it was going to be difficult for us to, you know, pursue our musical endeavor full time, if you will. So, compromise is a funny word. It can be a very positive word when you're talking politics, and it can be a negative word when you're talking about your faith, you know. So, for us, it felt like that we needed to reach out and shake hands with the audience that listened to Christian radio. And that's what we did in 1983 when we created Mission of Mercy, and it went to the top of the charts. And that gave us the platform and gave us the mechanism that we could sustain ourselves and our families. So, you know, I don't look at that as a negative thing. I look at it as a really positive thing. And all artists have to recognize the marketability of their product when they decide to sell it. We're not alone.
Yeah, so you guys had incredible success commercially. And then you guys decided to kind of to give that up. Like, I think you said you went off the road at like the age of 37, which is crazy. Some people would be scratching their heads about that. Why did you choose to do that at that time? And how much of a struggle was that for you to make that decision?
Well, it was young. And because of the style of music that we played, I didn't feel like that there was necessarily a classic audience for Christian rock music. You know, I have a lunch that I go to once a month and see a lot of those guys in groups like Love Song and mentioned Petra and David Meese and different ones that are still on the road doing what they do, and I'm grateful for that. But I didn't see that it would be the kind of thing that I could continue to do at the level that we were doing it. And when I walked away from DeGarmo and Keith, things were really good for us. We were still, you know, quite a hot commodity in the marketplace. And I just felt like that I never really wanted to be the old boxer trying to regain his title, you know. And also, another big driving factor in that is that I had started a record company with a couple other partners called Forefront Records that I was starting to pour myself into and work that we had signed, like DZ Talk and Audio Drone and Rebecca St. James and Skillet and other ones. And so from being the player on the field to being the coach on the sideline, and felt like that God had gifted me in that way, so it was a natural thing to do. But it was also a very, very difficult decision to walk away from DeGarmo and Key. I mean, that was a dream of mine since I was a little boy, you know, to play in a band and tour the world. And, you know, God thankfully redeemed me when I was 18 years old and allowed me to do that for him for the next 20 years. And so, but 37 was pretty young to walk away, I grant you that.
What was the hardest part of adapting from going from a full-time rock star to part-time executive to going into that executive realm full-time?
Well, it's just the dynamics, you know, when you're of the relationships. When you're in a band, it's kind of like camping out all the time, you know. And you get to be really, really close with the people that you travel with. In an office workplace environment, you know, people go home at night. And so the relationships were a little bit different during the day than what they were at with our band. And so I had to learn how to manage that and to manage expectations, because when I was in a musical group, there was never any time that I was off. I was always on. And when you're in an office environment, a lot of your staff goes home at 5 o'clock or 5:30 or whatever, and you can't call them at 8 o'clock, at 9 o'clock, and, you know, ask them to do something, and you shouldn't. And so, but it was a learning experience for sure.
You talked a lot about in your book just kind of the many of the conflict resolutions that you had to come across, whether it was Dana Key or your label partner, Dan Brock. How important was that for you over the course of your career to kind of be a peacemaker sometimes?
Well, I got pretty good at it, I say that. But, you know, any time that people work together in close working relationships, you have different ways of looking at things from time to time. That's not uncommon. And partnerships ebb and flow in the way that they grow. And you want to try to be in a partnership, I think, with somebody with opposing gifts, so that you're not both trying to occupy the same space. And sometimes you cross over into the same space, and it can become uncomfortable. So, but at other times, you know, it works really good. And I've had two major partnerships in my career, the one with Dana Key and then the second one with Dan Brock. And, you know, been able to maintain positive relationships even through the challenges that we faced. And it's just not an uncommon thing. And I wrote about that stuff in my book, and some of those relationships even get more complicated when you get your family members involved on both sides. And I wanted to lay that out there to just more or less let folks know that it, you don't always have the exact same vision as your partners, and that's okay. Hmm. That's a good thing.
And there's not really like a handbook for you to read as you're getting into the music industry of what to expect and everything. You kind of have to do trial by fire a lot of those times, and kind of fly by the seat of your pants a lot too.
Well, you do. There's not a handbook. Now, you know, maybe this book will be a bit of that for some folks, because there's some places in there that can help them, you know, decide in the music industry or even any kind of industry that they want to form with others, to kind of the pitfalls to watch out for. So, but yeah, there's not a way forward to understand everything that can happen in a relationship dynamic. It's just not possible.
So you were in the music industry all the way back in the late 70s, all the way up until recently. What were some of the biggest challenges for you as the music industry evolved over that time, from the way that people recorded music to the way people listen to music today? What were some of those challenges?
Well, you know, the music industry has changed a lot over the last 10 years, but it's not the first time it's changed. You know, in the 1920s, when the record business came into being for the first time, there was a lot of debate over whether radio stations should play recordings versus live, you know, programs, because live programs were how musicians got paid. And when they made records, they only got paid once. And then the radio station got the benefit of playing it, and the public got the benefit of hearing it over and over and over again, you know. So there's, you know, all businesses evolve and change and, you know, morph into something different. And the music business in the 60s and the 70s and probably back to the 50s was a singles business, where it truly was all about how much radio airplay you could get. So you created a market awareness, and then the public could decide whether they wanted to buy your product or go to your concert or what. And it became very controlled at that level, and it was difficult for any artist whatsoever to break through the barrier of broadcast radio without being aligned with a major label, if you will. Mm. And that was the way the music business was for a long time. And, it started to branch out from that, especially in the foundation years of the internet, because it gave the artist access to the public in a way that they didn't ever have access before. Now, what happens with the internet is the volume of stuff is so unbelievably astronomically large that if you can't figure out a way to raise your hand a little bit higher than anybody else, you know, it's hard to gather any traction or attention. So you have to have some sort of mechanism to do that, whether it's, you know, social media promotion or, you know, what they call a curator on the Spotify or Apple Music. And the curators are the major labels, again, you know, they control some of the gates to that access by the playlisting and by being curators. So, you know, it's just a process where an artist has to figure out how to reach their you know, consumer. Hmm. And it has changed a lot through the years, but then some of it's kind of the same.
Since you did get out of the, like, being the rock star at an early age, I know you helped with the creation of the Hero opera, but did you ever, like, miss creating songs? Are we going to find this big collection of songs that you've never released, like Prince? Or, you know, is that something that you missed and an outlet that you needed?
That's a really good question. I do get a creative itch from time to time, and the last bit of writing that I did was on Hero, the rock opera, which was kind of my agony and ecstasy moment, you know. Took like 5 years to create that thing. So you know, so I may record again. I don't know. I'm not that old, so that sounds kind of exciting. And it all depends on if I feel like I have something to say. And, you know, God is working with me through that. And since I've released this book, I've gotten a lot of invitations to go out and sing a little bit and speak a little bit, you know. So that's kind of an interesting twist. So we'll see where that goes. I don't know.
That would be great. You kind of told a very telling story in the book about your last conversation with Dana Key, and he kind of talked about like the tour that you two just did. But do you think that you guys would have done something like that?
We might have. Yeah, we might have. You know, we hadn't played together for 13 years when we were brought back together by an organization called ASCAP that wanted to present us a kind of a achievement award for what we had contributed to music. So we had so much fun doing that for the next couple of years, we would get together once a year, maybe twice a year, and we'd do a concert somewhere. And it was always easy, and it was always fun, and it was, you know, a good thing. So we might have done more of that. I could have seen that, for sure.
That would have been so cool to see. What do you hope that your legacy will be, kind of, as your whole career is put together? What do you think people will see?
Well, I had a pastor say to me one time, he said, Eddie, of all the things that you've been able to do, he said, I think the most important thing is for the first time in 300 years, you've given churches all over the world the same songs to sing, you know, with songs like Chris Tomlin's How Great Is Our God, or, you know, Matt Redman's 10,000 Reasons, or, you know, Stuart Cain Hine, How Great Thou Art. And, you know, I published all those songs. And so I was able to be part of distributing that material globally, and I think it meant a lot to church folks to be able to sing those songs and worship God. So I think that's a really cool thing. It's amazing to me how many letters and notes that I still get, you know, from stuff that happened 25 and 30 years ago in my career. I mean, just one of them yesterday, you know, about the impact that God allowed me to have in their life. And I'm still blown away that people still reach out to me pretty constantly, you know, weekly, about interactions that we had or conversations. And I mean, I hope I'm remembered probably first for being a good dad and being a good husband and being a good grandfather and instilling those kinds of godly principles and teachings into my family. I hope that I'm remembered for that first. Secondly, I hope I'm remembered for one that persevered. And, you know, Jesus saved me from the muck of life. And, you know, I've certainly had my moments, but God has, through his grace, has allowed me to walk with him now for a long time, 50 years almost. And so, you know, and I'm still enjoying that walk every day, even though sometimes I fall flat on my face, as we all do. God is there to lift me up. And I want to be remembered for somebody that persevered with Christ and loved Christ because he loved me first. So that's the kind of things I want to be remembered for. You know, I don't want to be remembered for the Dove Awards and the Grammy nominations and stuff like that. I mean, it's cool stuff. But it's not legacy stuff, you know.
All right, last question before we get out of here. If you could get into a time machine, go back to Memphis to where you're just a teenager, well, what would you tell yourself?
Oh my gosh. If you tell the truth, you don't have to have a great memory. I would tell myself that. I would tell myself that so much of life is just doing it, like Nike says, You know, if God calls you to do something, just got to do it. And it doesn't have to be at a certain level. God doesn't call us all to play in football stadiums, you know. But you just have to do it, and you have to be diligent, and you have to be responsible about showing up. I mean, that's a big part of it, you know. And I would tell myself those kinds of things. And then I think by and large, I would tell myself, if I was talking to myself when I was 15, is even through our darkest times, God is with us, maybe even more prominently than he is through the times of blessing. And, you know, when all things work together for the good of those that love the Lord, when we read that verse in the scripture, it really means that. And we all go through difficult and dark times, but that's all part of the journey that refines us and makes us more like Christ. So I would tell myself that.
Well, thank you so much, Eddie. I really enjoyed this. This was such a fun conversation. Thank you for your time. Thank you for writing the book. I really appreciated this.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
That was my interview with Eddie DeGarmo. I would just really like to thank him for taking the time and talking with me. That was kind of one of my bucket list interviews to do. Eddie has done so much for the Christian music industry, and that was really special to do. Man, there was a lot of interesting tidbits in there about the potential of a DeGarmo and Key potential reunion that obviously never happened because of Dana Key's unfortunate sudden passing. And also Eddie kind of being honest and saying, hey, maybe there's some future for me for releasing music. You know, it's been a while for him because he's been so busy as an executive. But, you know, he even admitted that he's been curious about exploring that field again. And we would definitely love if he did that. That would be so awesome. Thank you guys so much for checking us out. Before we head off into the sunset, we do need to talk about an event that we are putting on in Bridgeport, West Virginia, this weekend on Saturday, July 28th at 6 p.m. at Southridge Bridgeport. It's called Closure. It's a documentary with Juan Otero. It's a story about his life and kind of his upbringing, about how he was in an abusive household, and he went on to write songs for Audio Adrenaline, DC Talk, The Newsboys. Well, he didn't write songs for DC Talk, but he worked with them in a way. But regardless, it's a great story of redemption and forgiveness. You don't want to miss that. Juan Otero will be here himself in person to watch the documentary with us, to share some stories from his heart, and to play some songs for us in person. It's going to be a great night. That's July 28th at 6 p.m. at Southridge Bridgeport in Bridgeport, West Virginia. And if you have any curiosity, or you're just curious and you want to find out more information, you can text CLOSURE to 724-901-2524. That's CLOSURE to 724-901-2524. If you have any questions, that's the place you can ask. And also, we will be posting on our Facebook group, the Decent Christian Talk Podcast group. And you can also, there's an event page that we will have on there as well, that you can find out more information. But if you have any questions, just text that number and we'd be glad to help you. We've been talking with so many people that are so interested in coming. It's going to be a fun night. Juan's a great guy, and we're so excited to do an event with him in person. And who knows, maybe we'll do a live podcast with him. That'll be fun. We'd really like to see you out there. We always love to meet a lot of you guys, and this is a great, great event to do that. So check that out, and you know, if you're in the greater Pittsburgh, Columbus, Washington, D.C. area. It's only a couple hours from either location. Check that out. Text the number if you're in those areas, and we'll help you out. We'll help you get there. Before we head off into the sunset, we need to mention all our ways that you can get a hold of us. Of course, our website, decentchristiantalk.com. That is a place where you can find everything we post. And as not only can you donate to us on there, but there's a place where you can give us your email address. And for completely free to you, we will send you an email every single time we post a podcast. We have a couple hundred people that subscribe to us on there. Of course, we're on iTunes. We're on SoundCloud. For Android users, we're on Google Play. We're also on YouTube. I think we have over 3,000 subscribers on YouTube now. That's so awesome. And we also, of course, have our Facebook pages, Decent Christian Talk fan page, and we have the Decent Christian Talk podcast group, the group page, where we kind of discuss some things, and it's more interactive there. Check that out. Of course, we're on Twitter, DC Talk Act 2. That's DC Talk Act and the number 2. And we're also on Instagram, DC Talk Podcast. We've had so much fun with that lately. It's been a lot of fun. But hey, guys, we're going to head off into the sunset. I'd just really like to thank Eddie DeGarmo again for hanging out with us. We got a great show for coming up next time, too. We're going to kind of stay in the same lane of nostalgia, and we're going to have a really nice artist interview for the next one. Kind of the same era, but this band has actually put out music recently as well. That's all the hint I'm going to give you, but if you check out our Instagram page and our Facebook account, we will be making an announcement in about a week about what our next podcast will be. It's going to be a great show. It's season 3 is just continuing to amaze everybody, hopefully. Hey guys, thank you so much for checking us out. We will catch you next time. Peace.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.